Hey y'all, this is She Buys It with Whitney Nicely.
I have got an amazing podcast for y'all today. It's all about how Taylor Anderson in Nashville, Tennessee was able to make $32,000 on her very first deal. But I gotta warn you, this was an interview that we did in the FDDF Plus group coaching call. And so it's a little rough in the beginning, but y'all gotta stay tuned because these golden nuggets that she's about to drop are gonna change your investing strategy forever and ever, amen. All right, y'all stay tuned, here we go.
Yay, I hit the recording button, woohoo. All right, good morning everybody. We're waiting on Kendra and Amanda to get here, but we'll go ahead and get started. They'll be here shortly, I'm sure. Taylor Anderson is here with us this week and she runs a title company with her husband, who's the attorney, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's also in First Little Done Fast, and I wanted her to tell us, we'll do things a little out of order while we're waiting on Kendra and Amanda to get here. I wanted her to tell us about her first deal that she did because she basically didn't listen to anything I said, but still made a lot of money. And so I want her to share that information with everybody so that you can see there are thousands of ways to make money in real estate.
Yeah.
So go ahead, tell us about your first deal while we're waiting on the other two to get here, and then we'll do celebrations.
Okay, so I'm in Nashville, Davidson County, so it's a pretty metro area, and one of the things that we've done is we've learned the zoning code pretty well just to figure out, you know, what you can build on what type of land. And the first time, we've done this four times total, but the first time that I did this and we didn't move into the house, we actually made the most money. So, we didn't have to move. So that was great. So what we did is we found this house. It was on the market, but it was like a rental house. It was kind of junky. They wanted too much for it for the rental value, but it was on this really big lot where it was zoned that you could build two houses. And just looking at the land, there's actually an alley on the back of the lot. So it was kind of like you could totally have it private anyway if you were to put two houses, because that's, you know, that's one of the things that affects the end value of the houses around here. People like them side by side. They don't like them front to back, but this would have had to be front to back if you were to keep the front house, but you could still have your own driveway. So we thought we could get a little bit more value out of it that way. So we were able to, you know, buy the house on the piece of land, subdivide it, which is basically just some legal jujitsu filing. You know, you just file this stuff and then you have an A and a B in our county. I don't know, I can't speak to everywhere, but that's how it works here. So we did that, we sold the B, and then we were able to sell the A separately later. And we ended up making about $35,000 on that one transaction. Yeah. Another one a couple months later, same exact setup.
So I have a couple questions. Okay. I get the jujitsu paperwork, but did you have to have a survey or anything?
Yeah, we do. You do need to get a survey. A lot of these are, they're in sort of planned neighborhoods. I know that sounds weird, but like there's no HOA, but it is in Metro Davidson County. So like it's been there for a while. So the survey piece has not been like a real trouble, like a hurdle for us or anything. You do need a boundary survey. And that's part of like the legal filings is the survey gives you the new legal description, I guess is the piece there.
So when you get it surveyed, is there a minimum square footage that you have to meet before they will tell you, okay, you can have a second city lot here?
Hey, Kendra. Yeah, so you can figure that out at least here even before you do the survey. We have like the, I don't forget what you call it, but it's called Parcel Viewer here. You can see all the lots and everything by the address. And you can just look it up and I say, oh, well, this lot is R6 and it tells me the square footage is 11,000 square feet, so I should be fine there. And I think that I can build two. And you can even, you know, call the county beforehand, call the codes and planning department and say, hey, do you think I can fit two here before you even go under contract? Like you could do all that before you even put your money out there.
Okay, awesome. Because I know, so you're in Nashville, basically, and I'm in Knoxville, which is like the ugly redheaded stepchild for Tennessee. But in the city, they have to have a certain square footage, and it has to be so many feet on the road and so far back, and it has to meet a certain qualification before they'll say, okay, this is an actual extra lot. And I have a lot in the city that is 0.52, so over half an acre, but they won't subdivide it because the largest part of that is a sinkhole.
But I
knew that when I bought it, so it's okay, and I wasn't planning on building anything there either. But I just want everybody to realize that, yes, I want you to buy big parcels with a little dinky house on one side and then chunk off the other and sell it and then sell the house and do all that. Yes, I totally want you to do that. But I want you to also know that there's going to be some minimum qualifications, and you're going to have to invest some money. Taylor actually bought this property, closed on it, paid for it, bought it, and got it surveyed and put it through the system and had to write different checks to get it approved and get the paperwork to go through. Like, yes, it sounds super fun, fast, and easy. How long did it take you?
It took about three or four months from start to finish.
3 or 4 months. And now she's still doing those. You've done what, 3 or 4 now?
Yeah, I've done 4 total. And they still, I mean, they take that long.
Takes that long. That's just how long it takes. It's not going to be a close on Tuesday, sell it again on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, when you divided that lot and you sold off the extra piece, did you sell it to a neighbor? Did you sell it to the person that bought the other house? Or did you sell it to some stranger coming in to build a new house?
We sold it to a developer that we knew. We've actually sold 3 of them to the same developer.
So now you're going out just looking for these extra lots, knowing that you're going to have to put up the money and get it changed, but you've got a track record of doing that, and you have your end buyer in mind. So as many of these as you can feed him, he's going to gobble them up, right?
Correct, yeah.
Awesome. That's a perfect, perfect niche to be in, because it's never ending. This developer doesn't want to be out hunting down land and going through the parcel tracker and putting 3 months into it. He wants to develop.
Mm-hmm.
You throw it over to him, you make $35,000 every time. You only need to do 1 or 2 of those a year to make a huge difference in the bottom line.
Right, right.
Awesome, I love it. And also want to point out that Taylor bought this house off the MLS. It was listed, right?
Yeah, most of them have been listed. I think we only bought one that wasn't listed.
Which goes directly against what I teach, which is totally fine. She made $35,000, and I'm totally good with that. And it was rented, right?
Yeah, it was a rental.
So I only want empty houses. So again, she went against everything that I said, and she totally made money, and I'm okay with that. It's totally fine. But she had a plan, and she worked it. And she made a lot of money. Made a lot of money. And it's good. It's all good. That's what I want y'all to realize, okay? However you're gonna make the money, do it to it, baby. I'm okay with it. The 3 ways that I wanna do deals may not work in your area, in your town, for your strategy, but it might.
Yeah, we don't love rental, so I mean, this is kind of something that.
Perfect. I love it. And how did you get into First Selling Fast? Wasn't it Leslie?
I have bought a deal from Leslie in the past, but it was actually my husband, Matt.
Matt. He used to follow me on Facebook.
Yeah.
Awesome. But still, they've learned something, or at least got in the right kind of atmosphere to say, yeah, we can go do these deals.
Yeah. Yeah. And then your marketing stuff has been really helpful just to, you know, really just for any kind of deal. It works in a lot of different businesses as well.
Yeah, they make fun of me a lot for my down-home kind of marketing, but it works. It flipping works.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm super proud of you. $35,000 on the first deal, and then you've done 4 others since then. And tell me about that vacation house. Did you get a log cabin somewhere out in the woods that you did at least option on?
I do have a log cabin. It's supposed to close March 31st, and I think we will be making about $170,000 on that one.
Holy Pete!
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
I got that lead. I got it from an investor carrot site, and then I paid for Google Ads. So I got that lead that way. You know, get rid of your house fast, whatever, whatever. And then they let us take the house. We paid them a little bit of money. And then they let us take the house subject to the existing mortgage, which they were already like 10 years into. So every month, I think my payment is $1,300 on a 4,500 square foot house. And I get $1,000 of debt payment down every month. So even if it's empty, like, I don't care. So we found an agent out there, because it's kind of far from here. It's about 2 hours from where I live. We got an agent out there. He's been great. He found a cleaner to clean up the house, took some really great pictures. We're under contract at $379,000. And I think that they owe $150,000 now is like the mortgage balance. So it's a big spread.
Holy crap. I want to give you a hug so bad, but we have to keep the 6 foot distance.
Yeah,
that is awesome. Okay. So you took it subject to, but you don't have anybody in it. So you're just making the payments, but somebody's just going to buy it straight out from you.
Correct. Yeah.
Did you put any money down on it?
I paid money to the seller. I call it walk away money or whatever. Yeah, we paid about $60,000. So that, I mean, that's kind of a lot, but again, I knew their mortgage balance was, it was 150 and change. And, you know, I wanted to get it caught up and it not go to foreclosure, and that there's costs associated with that.
Absolutely. Totally cool. And the payoff for that is going to be huge.
Yeah.
So awesome.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the house? It's 2 hours away. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, we went out there. Well, we didn't see it before we bought it, but we did go out and see it. And it's huge. I mean, it's like a Gatlinburg. We thought about doing a vacation rental, but there's just nothing out there. I just didn't think that there was really a market for it. But, you know, it's like 7 acres or something. So, you know, we got 4 or 5 offers after we put it on the market.
Fantastic. Just get rid of it and go with it. Have you had it a year, or are you going to be short term on it?
It'll be short term. We closed in November, and we tried to, you know, get fancy and do a wrap and sell it and all that stuff. And we just couldn't find, in that price point, we couldn't find anybody. So we just went retail.
Okay. Awesome. But I mean, there's nothing wrong with just letting an agent list it. Letting them make some money. You're going to get the bulk of the money. Your sellers are happy because they're caught up. They're not going to foreclosure. They're not going to have to file bankruptcy. All of that was stopped.
Yeah.
It's a win-win-win all the way across. And these buyers are probably getting a heck of a deal.
Yeah, they're getting a pretty good deal. I mean, it's as is. We didn't have to fix anything, which was nice for us. And then, you know, the sellers who let us take it subject to, I mean, we will have sold it in less than 6 months. So, you know, that gives them a chance to kind of move on with their life.
Perfect. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they found you. You're doing Google ads off Investor Carrot. That's awesome. And when you called them, tell me how this conversation went when you called them.
Well, I actually have a partner who deals with the leads. It's just kind of, I don't know. He's really good getting these people to do this. We have a lot of subject to in the pipe right now. I guess one thing that we do ask a lot is, well, what happens if you can't sell your house? Especially these people that I know are behind, like they don't have a plan.
That's a great question. And it's very open-ended. So what happens if you don't sell it?
Mm-hmm.
Then they can go through this dark rabbit hole of awful stuff.
Yeah.
And you don't even have to paint that picture. They already know what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
That's a great question. Man. Okay. Supposed to close on the 31st though.
Mm-hmm.
Are we still looking good?
We're still looking good. We called yesterday and, you know, everybody's continuing to move forward. And that's kind of what I've seen at my title company, is anything that was already in process is kind of, you know, still working to get closed. I have not had as many new orders coming in. I think that's just people are just, you know, financing is maybe getting hard to come by. And
I think I might have to turn part of this meeting into a podcast too. So tell me about the title company. Tell me. So you have the title company, but your husband is the attorney in charge, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in Tennessee, you don't have to be an attorney to own a title company. You can be a licensed title agent. We're both title agents, but he is also an attorney.
Awesome. So as a title company, tell me, what's going on? What do you wish investors knew so that when they bring you deals, and I got to give you a huge round of applause here too, because a lot of title companies and attorneys won't even discuss subject to deals, but you're actually doing them.
Yeah, like, I show a lot of them.
That's incredible. You do them for yourself. You do them for other people. Like, way to go and think outside the box, because a lot of attorneys won't even touch them with a 10-foot pole or a 30-foot pole. They act like they've never even heard of that. So thank you for being on the investor side.
Yeah, it's definitely, I have a lot of business from subject to. I think maybe one of the reasons they don't want to touch them is they're hard, they're messy, they take a while. But some of the benefits are that, you know, I have a lot of business, and risk is about how much of it you understand and, you know, care to delve into. I think the easiest thing with subject to is if you just disclose, you know, if your sellers are in a hard spot and you say, you know, look, I'm taking this subject to, I'm going to be making your payments. It won't go away until I sell it. And there's a lot of, you know, documentation on my end that goes with that. But if everybody's on the same page, it goes so much smoother. I think that's probably one of the things that scares people about subject to, is if you don't want your seller to know. But if everybody knows, it's fine.
If you tell the truth, you don't have to remember who you told what to.
Exactly.
And there's no secrets in real estate. It's all going to come out in the paper in 30 days. We might as well just be open and honest with it now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of times, I think when you really adopt that kind of model, it becomes so much easier, because you can tell your sellers, look, I'm somebody safe that you can talk to. We're going to have to know what's going on anyway, so just tell me now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I completely agree. The truth always wins.
Yeah. And something I wish that investors knew about, you know, title companies and closings and all that stuff, is it's real helpful to have somebody look at your documents beforehand, whether that be your attorney or your title company or both or whatever, because a lot of times I'll get a contract and then it won't have who's supposed to pay what, or it will not be real clear, and then, you know, title company is supposed to be an impartial third party, so I've got to go to both of you and ask, oh, what did you want to do with this? And of course it's never the same thing. So if it's on the contract beforehand, that makes it way easier to get through your transaction smoothly. And I will say that is one of the benefits, in my opinion, of the TAR contract, is it's all there.
Yep. And that's on the purchase and sale. Does TAR have a subject to contract?
They do not, no.
Okay, so we're all going to wing it when we're doing subject to deals anyway and lease options. In my business, I chose to pay closing costs for my seller and for me as the buyer. That way the title company knows where the money's coming from, my side, and it's just super upfront and clear. And I get to write off those expenses.
Yeah, and that's another thing, is a lot of times your sellers don't really understand like what it costs to sell a property, and that title insurance is extra. And in, at least in Middle Tennessee, sellers pay for the title insurance a lot. So that's another probably $1,000 on average that they end up maybe having to pay that they weren't expecting. So if it's in the contract beforehand, that makes that a lot easier.
And if they're going to pay $1,000 and they owe $8,000 in back taxes and they owe something else, remember that money doesn't, like, they don't have to write a check for that. It comes off their bottom line when we go through the settlement statement. So instead of getting $150,000 for a $150,000 contract, they're going to get $139,000. But if they owe $112,000, it doesn't matter. They're still going to get a check. They're still going to pay their portion. And whether you pay or they pay, it's still going to get the deal done. And honestly, okay, I started with a $150,000 house. If the seller has to have $150,000 and you got it under contract to sell it for $180,000 and the seller won't pay $2,000 to close, I would suggest pay the $2,000 to close and get $28,000 instead of $30,000. Don't be greedy. Just get the deal done. Pay for it and let's go. Close. Let's go.
Yeah. Another thing that I wish that investors would understand, especially a lot of wholesalers. I don't know how, I think a lot of wholesalers about to disappear here in the next couple of months, but a lot of wholesalers don't ever end up having a buyer in mind, and then they send me a contract and they can't close on it, and then it kind of disappears. Your title company, if it's a good one, they're incurring expenses. You know, they're looking at your contract, they're ordering title search as soon as they get the contract, they're ordering the HOA, and all these things cost money. So it's just if you're serious about doing your deals, it's good to have serious buyers beforehand.
One thing that I teach in First Sold and Fast is have your contract with your seller and get your contract with your buyer, get both, and then send it to your title company so that they can see the full picture.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that's if you're doing it subject to, or you're wholesaling it, or you're whatever, because sometimes, depending on what your buyer says, you might need to change a contract with your seller. Well, just go ahead and change that. This piece of paper will let you write whatever you want to on it. If you got to scrap one and amend it, or just scrap it and start fresh, and there's a chance that you might have to renegotiate down with your seller, you might have to write a new contract to close sooner with your seller. It's not always a bad thing to renegotiate. You might give them more because you're getting so much more, so much sooner. But once you have both contracts, that's when you want to send it to the title company, because they need to see the full picture, and it gives them more confidence to spend more time and effort and energy to work with you, especially if you're new.
Mm-hmm. If you already have your buyer contract there, or your assignment agreement, or whatever it is that you're doing, that makes it a lot easier.
And okay, let's make up a scenario here. Let's say that I've got this house for $10 from the seller, and it's a $200,000 house, but I got my buyer contract and they're going to be putting $3,000 down. Well, now we got some money involved, and now I want that money to go through the title company, and I want the earnest money that the buyer is putting down, I want it to go to the title company. I can hold it in my account if I want to, but it's safer at the title company, and the title company is properly prepared to hold other people's money waiting on a deal to close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lot of things with the, and I don't want to get into giving legal advice here, but a lot of things, earnest money at the title company is important, especially if people disagree or somebody wants to back out of the transaction. The title company can kind of just hold on to that until an agreement is reached.
Because they are that third party company in the middle of this, because emotions get high. Now, if I've got $10 in the deal and it folds, I don't care, whatever.
Right.
But that buyer that has $3,000 in the deal, they're going to be fighting for their money unless it says in the contract that it's hard and they can't get it back.
Mm-hmm.
Then that money goes to the wholesaler or the seller or somebody.
Right.
But the title company will help you with that. And that's why it's important to work with a title company and know that you're speaking the same language, because sometimes some title companies are speaking in so many legal terms, my simple mind can't get around, what are you saying? Just say it to me.
Yeah.
But if you're working with a title company that understands investing, especially creative investing, they'll be able to speak to you like in a way you can understand.
Yeah. And that's another tip, is if you've got something and you're not real sure, you know, like what's going to happen, what needs to happen, just get on the phone and ask. And if you tell them what you're trying to do, you'll probably, you know, save both of you from, you know, telling your seller, oh, hey, John Smith's buying it, instead of Whitney Nicely. If you're just, everybody's on the same page from the beginning, it kind of keeps you from sticking your foot in your mouth later.
And one thing I've learned is sometimes around the country, or depending on which guru you're listening to, you might call something one thing and just the vocabulary will be different. So if you explain what you're trying to say, you know, give it to me in a sentence. Sometimes owner financing and seller financing are the same thing, but if there's a debt on the property, it becomes subject to or a lease option, even though you're saying owner financing. And so sometimes it's just a vocabulary confusion or mix up. But if you'll really explain what you're saying and not text it, not email it, because sometimes the meaning doesn't come through that way, get on the phone. I know some people are afraid of the phone. Get on the phone and talk to people.
Yeah.
Let them know what you're trying to say.
Some of my clients do. I don't do this particularly, but if they're taking their property subject to, and let's say the seller says, oh, well, I really, really need $5,000 to get out of this deal. But, you know, my mortgage is $100,000. A lot of people that I work with will work with a private lender to get a second position deed of trust to pay that walkaway money and anything that needs to be improved on that property. And that kind of gives them in the deal without any cash.
That's a great, great example of how to get a deal done without any cash. Bring somebody in to take the second. If it's a $200,000 house and needs $30,000 in work and there's $100 owed on it, there's plenty of meat in there.
Yeah, a lot of people don't have problems giving a second on those kinds of deals.
But if it's a $200,000 house, they owe $190,000 and it still needs $30,000, this ain't a deal.
Right.
Or it's an assignment deal to an end buyer. Or it's a, hey, just call my agent friend and let them list it for you. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get what they wanted as a commission, but they'll still get the deal done. And they can still put that on their check for their requirements for the year. Mm-hmm. Hey, Taylor, speaking of vocabulary, what is the difference in a title search and a title opinion?
We don't do title opinions through the office. We'll do a title search is just where we search back the property, who owned it before that. We usually go back 30 years just so that we don't miss any like mortgages that weren't released. We are searching for usually the current owner and then at least one prior owner for any other judgments. Or like if you don't pay your credit card, that can get attached to your house, things like that. So that's a title search. Like those documents together is a title search. Now a title opinion is more similar to a title commitment. Now I do issue title commitments, which is basically like a written report of, you know, this is the legal description. This is who currently owns it. This is how they took title. These are, you know, this is an easement that's there. It kind of gives you a formal written write-up of everything in the title search that's related to this property.
So if I'm new and I've got the seller and we're under contract and I call you and I say, hey, I got this deal, they say they owe $190,000. Can you check and see if that's the only mortgage against this property? What would you do? How would you handle that if I called you and said, I've got this seller, they say they owe $190,000. Can you check on it for me?
Well, for me, I want to know, do you have it under contract? I don't really, I want to work with people who are legitimate, not just calling me for title searches. That's just my opinion. Assuming you have it under contract, I say, okay, well, let's get a title search and I'll see what comes back. And then I can get the search and I can just call you up and say, hey, Whitney, I see this one mortgage for $200,000 in 2000, whatever. Yeah, I don't see anything else. Now that's more informal. If you want to give it to me and say, yes, I want the title insurance, then I could give you a commitment. And that would be sort of like an insurance binder where State Farm says, oh, it'll cost you $500 for your car insurance.
Yeah. And when I get closer to close, I'm going to say, okay, pull the paperwork on it. But if I'm doing a lot of deals and I'm not sure they're going to close, but I want to see who actually owns this, what's going on. I've had some title companies, especially in the beginning, and they charged me, you know, $25-$50 to look up just to make sure that what the seller told me was the truth is the truth. Mm-hmm. And then I've got, you know, another title company that I started doing all my deals and closing all my deals with them. And so they didn't charge me for those. They just, you know, did it as a courtesy to make sure that I wasn't about to get myself into a situation.
Exactly. And that's something that I do as well. You know, if it's somebody new, or I know that you've sent me 4 deals in the last month and 0 of them have closed, probably not going to get that information for free. Cause it's not free to your title company. So that's something to keep in mind. It's not like they just have this access, because they have to pay for it.
Well, even if they do have access, there's going to be a yearly fee associated to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. What is a cloud on the title? Because we have so many clouds these days. I don't know. Is it where the stuff's stored? Is it actually in the sky? What's a cloud?
So a cloud on title is... I don't know why they call it that. But so it would be like something, let's say that you got a property under contract with your seller and he said, you know what, Whitney, I don't want to sell it to you anymore, but you go ahead and file something like a memorandum of contract or a notice of whatever, notice of contract or something. And you just say, you know, whatever seller, I'll talk to you later. And then 2 years later, yeah, 2 years later, he decides he wants to sell it and he lists it on the market and he gets an offer and they go to do a title search and your memorandum of contract comes up. That would be a cloud on title. So, and there's a lot of opinions on whether you know, how long this will be around and if it should exist at all and whatever. But as it is now, your memorandum of contract would come up and that would be like a stop to the title company and they would contact probably the seller and you and be like, you know, she had an interest in this property.
Even if it was $10, I had an interest in the property.
Mm-hmm. And if you record that, and your deal falls apart, that may give you some recourse later. Now, in my experience, when I come across something like that, you know, 6 months later, a year later, whatever, those people a lot of times don't want to buy the house anymore, or they couldn't buy it, you know, really to start with, but they will accept your $1,000, $2,500, you know, $10,000 to release that.
So I had a deal, one of the first deals that I ever did, and so it was in 2014. I bought a house for $300,000, I think I sold it for $325,000. People gave me $5,000 to move in and they paid the seller $1,500 a month. It was a huge house, 5 bedrooms, 5 baths, on a really big lot. It was almost a duplex. Like, these people lived upstairs and they redid the bottom for their kids to live in. And so it was like 2 full houses so they could live separately but together. So I found a family in a similar situation that needed to move in and everything was fine. Until the new family decided that they weren't going to stay married for forever and they moved out. But in the beginning, I had the contract for $10 and I had it for 5 years and I filed it at the county. And when I filed it at the county, even though I took the $5,000 assignment and I got out of it, I didn't float those monthly payments. I didn't do anything. They were all on their own. I forgot that I'd filed that contract way back when in the beginning. So last summer sometime, like 5 years almost to the date, I got a call from a title company. They said, hey, we're trying to sell this house on Forgerty and we've got a cloud on the title and your name is attached to it. And I was like, what? Like, I did not even remember this deal. Like, I remember these sellers, wonderful people, but I did not remember the deal. And I definitely didn't remember filing my contract against the property. But I said, you know, and the title company was asking me if I wanted to do a release. And I was like, yeah, just send me whatever you want. And I didn't get $1,500, $2,500, or $10,000 on it because I made $5,000 5 years ago on it. These sellers took a risk working with me in the beginning, and I forgot that I had it. And I just wanted to waive it. They were selling it. I don't even know what they got for it. I don't know who did it. I don't know what it was. I just knew that I was blocking their best life 5 years later. And so I just signed the release and let it go. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't important to me at that point to make any more money off of it. I figured the deal was done a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So you can do that too. You can just let it go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess I could have been hard about it, but I didn't care. You mentioned judgments.
Mm-hmm.
What is a judgment? I thought we weren't supposed to judge people.
A judgment, the most common ones that I see is probably credit cards and like medical bills. So if you have this, or you have a seller that has a credit card and they're behind on payments, and it goes to court and they don't show up, usually they'll file a judgment and that gets, if they own property in the county, that'll get attached to their property. So that gives your title company a headache when the search comes back and there's 5 credit card judgments. It's kind of just like a mortgage. You got to call the company, get a payoff. Usually it comes out of seller proceeds, but you know, not always. I guess you could pay it as a buyer. So that is another thing that we ask sellers when we're looking to purchase a property. You say, oh, okay, you think you owe, you know, $150 and you're behind on payments. Are you behind on payments anywhere else? Are there any other, you know, things that are going to come up? So
I think it's super important to ask those sellers, okay, how much do you owe on the house? And they'll say, however much. Do you owe anything else? Mm-hmm. And that's when they'll say, well, I got this car, or well, we bought a boat, or well, we had some medical bills, or they go, they always start with a well. I don't know. It's a deep subject. Mm-hmm. They go, well, I bought a condo like that last year. It was a friend of mine from a different lifetime ago. And she called and said, hey, I need to redo my kitchen and I'm going to sell it. And I was like, okay, well, I don't really do that, but tell me more about what's going on. Well, I got this condo free from my aunt, and then I started dating this guy, and he didn't make the payments on a car, but I'd co-signed it. So now the credit union is going to put a cloud on my free and clear condo, and it's got to be cleared up by next Wednesday, or they're going to take me to jail. And I was like, okay, well, they're not going to take you to jail. How much do you need for the condo? Well, and so it's this whole thing about, tell me what's going on. Tell me the truth. Tell me how I can help you. Tell me the full story. Mm-hmm. And it was that she owed the IRS $25,000. She owed $15,000 after, she didn't even owe $15,000 on this car, but after fees and this and that and the other, and it had been so long and court costs and everything, she owed $15,000 now. And she still wanted to flip the kitchen or whatever. She needed $10,000 for credit cards, probably. She needed $50,000 in less than a week on a $120,000 condo. And so we bought the condo, gave her the money. She got like no money at closing though, because of all the clouds and all of the judgments and all the things. And that's what I want, especially new investors, to realize these people have problems. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of pride attached to this. But if you will just go to them like Jesus with your hands open saying, I'm a safe place. Tell me what you got going on. Tell me the truth and the whole truth so I can get a full picture of what I need to do. I'll call you back in a couple hours and give you a plan. I'll give you three offers. This lady didn't need three offers, but she also wanted to stay in the house. So I couldn't offload it to anybody else because they wouldn't have wanted a tenant in place that used to own the house, and it would have been a mess. So we just bought it. But it was the same thing. It was judgments stacked up. Mm-hmm. It could be IRS liens on the property. Yeah. It could be tax liens.
Subject to have additional judgments or unpaid taxes. Or another thing that I run into in some of the lower end properties will be a UCC financing statement, which will be like somebody added a pool or they financed their HVAC unit. So they got to be paying, you know, Hiller or whatever.
A UCC, what's that?
That's what the people who, you know, put in the pool or put in the HVAC unit, that's what they file with the county to say, hey, look, if they go to sell it and they haven't paid me off yet, they owe me money.
You know, that's really smart because we see a lot of people looking like they're living really large, but they've just really increased their bottom line or their monthly nut that they got to pay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's a great, I didn't even think about that. Pools and air conditioning units and all sorts of stuff. And I mean, even I think roofers, you can get a loan on getting a new roof, and that could be on a tenant property, or that could be on a personal property too, if you're dealing, especially in high end stuff.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that stuff would have to be paid. Like when I talk about getting $10 houses or taking a house subject to or under a lease option for $10, that's because the title company came back with everything clear. Like you were saying on your deal, you had to put big money down because there was back stuff to pay off and you couldn't take clear title until that stuff was done.
Yeah, like I wouldn't want to purchase a property with a foreclosure pending. Like I would want to get that cleared up beforehand.
I wouldn't want it with the foreclosure pending or with the HVAC pending or the pool pending or any of that stuff attached to it. Because when I sell it, I want it clear.
Exactly.
When I get it, I want it clear. And sometimes that means you're going to have to put some money up. But like you said earlier, you get a private money lender. As long as there's still meat on the bone, it's not going to be a hard problem to find a private money lender.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. That is absolutely awesome. Okay. I am totally out of questions, but let's pretend this is a podcast. What advice do you have for new women who are trying to get started in real estate investing?
I would say experiment. I've been doing this about 4 years. There's lots of different ways to make money, whether it's, you know, your goal is to purchase one rental a year, or you want to try, you know, a lease option, or you're interested in title. There's lots of different ways to make money. I would just say don't be afraid to make mistakes. It will happen. They can't all be winners. The sooner you accept that, the easier it will be. I would just say experiment. Try wholesaling. Try experimenting with your marketing. Find something that works for you. Like, I like working with partners because I think that they are better with sellers than I am. And I am better at finding deals. And I like finding deals. So there's lots of different ways.
I love that. I think that is great advice. And just don't be afraid for everything not to be a home run.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I love that. If anybody has any questions for you, how can they get in touch with you?
You can find me on torotitle.com, TORO TITLE. Also on Facebook, Taylor Anderson. Email is on torotitle.com, and I'm usually at the office.
So. I lied. I thought of another question.
Okay.
My title company, my attorney that I've used for forever, is in Tennessee, and he is getting certified or licensed or something to do mobile closings.
Okay. There's a difference between mobile closings and remote being like online. I'm a commissioned online notary in Tennessee. This is something Matt and I were talking about this morning. With everything changing in the landscape of, you know, trying to keep people away from each other, remote online notarization, we don't have legislation right now like mandating it, but it is possible. The issues that I'm running into is, one, some of these smaller counties will not accept electronically signed and notarized documents to file. And then two is a lot of lenders want their deed of trust signed in front of a notary. So those are the two. But now if you're paying cash, or if you have like a private money lender who says, sure, mobile notarize it, that would work as long as the county would accept it. And the online notarization process is just like this. It's a webcam. And then like I would send you a document. It's real similar to like .loop or AuthentiSign, or, you know, just where you click it and sign it. And then I get it back and I can file it, and that's it. Mobile notary is just kind of where, like, I'm a notary and I would come to your house.
Okay. So there's a difference. Okay. I wasn't aware. See, it's the vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe he means online. I don't know. But I think that we will see some legislation soon, opening up, you know, more counties to be accepting these documents, and for it to just be easier to not have to notarize in person.
Well, that's good to know. And you'll keep us updated on how that plays out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay. We're pretending this is a podcast because this just turned into a podcast. But if you're listening, this was the She Buys It podcast, and I have a free gift for you. Go to getyourfirstdeal.com, and we will see you next week. Yay! Thank you. Hang on just a second. I'm going to stop the recording on this, and then we'll let the girls ask some questions.